The gaseo mirror for listening. Statement of complainant. Audio addition. The same account as the written complaint, told as one continuous story for the ear, the file numbers set aside, the facts kept whole. Allegation framing throughout. No finding has been made. How to listen. Open this page in your browser and use its built-in read aloud feature, or let any voice assistant read it to you. Every exact reference, check numbers, certified mail tracking, signing envelope identifiers, account numbers, and exhibit labels lives in the companion print complaint, where an attorney or investigator can match any sentence here to its source document. This version carries the story. The print version carries the proof. What you are about to hear. What follows is a first-person account, prepared to be heard. It belongs to Michael Gaseo, who brings this matter himself, without a lawyer, in the Orange County Superior Court in California. It concerns a home in Huntington Beach, a family of three who lived in it for more than 2 years, and the way they came to be removed from it over rent that the documents say had already been paid. Everything in this statement is offered as an allegation and as a question for the proper authority to answer. No court and no agency has made any finding on any question raised here. Where the law protects a person's silence, no adverse inference should be drawn from it. One name should be fixed at the start, so there is no confusion later. The eviction attorney in this matter is Stephen D. Silverstein of Tustin, California. He is not the same person as another attorney of a similar name, and nothing said here refers to that other person. An older federal case once brought against Mr. Silverstein was set aside by stipulation and dismissed with prejudice, leaving no surviving finding of liability. It is noted only so the record is complete. The case in brief. The Hu, a retired schoolteacher and principal, his wife, and his mother-in-law, a household that included two seniors, one of them with limited English. The owner of the home is a practicing dentist. Around him were a listing agent, a managing agent who held a broker's license, and the eviction attorney. The family paid their rent, in full and on time, for 26 months. In the spring of the final year, a new lease was placed in front of them under pressure. The rent was demanded more than once, and an eviction was filed claiming the rent had never been paid. They were removed. Within weeks, the home was advertised as a short-term rental at a far higher price. A single-family home on Bryn Court in Huntington Beach, and the limited civil eviction docket of the Orange County Superior Court. Why this statement exists, to lay the documentary record before the agencies and the court in an orderly way, and to let them decide the questions it raises. The family is not asking to be believed on their word. They are asking that the papers be read. The household and the home. I am Michael Gaseo. I am 72 years old. I gave 30 years to public education in California, teacher, counselor, vice principal of a high school, principal of a middle school, before I retired, and the habits of careful record keeping I learned in that work run through everything I am about to describe. My wife, Yulia, is a co-complainant and was a named tenant on our leases. Her mother, Tatiana, a senior with limited English, lived with us and was a named occupant. We had two dogs, which we disclosed in our very first written message to the listing agent. The home is on Bryn Court in Huntington Beach. The owner is Fat Tran, a dentist. The agent who first leased it to us was Anna Lai. She is believed, though I have not independently verified it, to be the owner's daughter. The agent who later managed the property and who held a broker's license was Hanson Liu. 26 months, paid in full. We moved in during the spring of 2022 under a written lease at $5,000 a month. For 26 months, we paid that rent in full and on time, by bank wire, month after month, with an unbroken record at our bank to show for it, on the order of $146,000 over the life of the tenancy. In all that time, the landlord asserted no late payment and no missed payment. We were, by any ordinary measure, good tenants in a home we cared about. The spring of the final year. In the spring of 2024, the arrangement changed. A new lease was put in front of us under a sign or vacate condition, to be signed within a few days, on a different electronic signing system than the one our original lease had used. The new lease raised the rent, and on its face it directed our rent not to the owner and not to a broker's trust account, but into the managing agent's own personal bank account. A payment we had already made that same spring, a $5,000 wire in April, appeared nowhere on the new document, not credited, not acknowledged, not mentioned. There was also a habitability problem in the home, and we raised it with the city. Soon after that complaint, the eviction machinery began to move. The closeness of those two events, our complaint, and then the notice, is one of the questions this record presents. The rent that was paid, and paid again. This is the heart of it. The rent at the center of this eviction was not unpaid. It was paid, and then effectively paid again. In April, we wired $5,000 to the owner, and the owner acknowledged receiving it. At the end of May, we obtained a cashier's check for the new month's rent, the full amount, less a documented repair deduction the law allows, and mailed it by certified mail to the brokerage office, where it was signed for on delivery. That check was never cashed, never endorsed, never returned, and never credited to our account. It sits sealed in my possession to this day. By the time it arrived, the managing agent had, according to the public licensing record, already stepped away from the brokerage whose name was on the envelope. Then, at the end of June, the owner telephoned, and in that call he directed me to wire $5,350 into his personal account or face an eviction filing. I made the call that reached him. The demand was his answer to it. I complied, under protest, and noted my objection in the memo line of the wire itself. That money was never given back. It remains where it was sent. So by the time anyone spoke of non-payment, the rent had been tendered through the proper channel and refused, and then paid a second time, under threat, into a personal account, outside the contract, and outside the trust account rules that govern how a broker is supposed to handle a tenant's money. The notice, and the filing. A 3-day notice came, and then, a few days later, an unlawful detainer complaint, claiming the rent had never been paid. The complaint credited neither the cashier's check we had tendered nor the wire the owner had demanded. It was filed within the window that, under California law, raises a presumption of retaliation when it follows a habitability complaint. No landlord ever called to ask where the rent was, the way an ordinary landlord does when rent is genuinely missing. The first contact was the notice. The trial. I came to court with documents, two signed leases, the sealed cashier's check, certified mail receipts, the bank's own wire records, and a text message from the owner's side acknowledging that a payment had gone to the agent's account. The case against us rested, on the four corners of the record, largely on what was said aloud rather than on what was written down. In open court, more than one of the charges against us was abandoned, and the largest money demand was cut down sharply. Whether a documentary record of payment can be overcome by an oral assertion of non-payment is a question this matter presents. No finding has been made. The written ruling that followed carried arithmetic on its own face that does not reconcile, a discrepancy I have flagged for the reviewing authority through the proper correction channel. The day we left, and the bill that followed. We vacated on the 31st of July, 2024, a departure date the eviction attorney himself conceded on the court record. We left with the rent current and without a sheriff's lockout. The keys, the house keys, the garage remote, the mailbox key, were delivered to my then counsel's office and forwarded from there. So the date on which the landlord's side actually took possession of them is not something I can testify to of my own knowledge. The move-out clearance report, the document that tallied what we supposedly owed, was dated the 5th of August, 5 days after we were already gone. It was signed in the name of Anna Lai, 17 months after she had stated, in writing, that she no longer worked for the owner. On its face, that report omitted our senior occupant from the list of residents. It recited the rent at the old rate, the very rate the eviction notice had contradicted. It stated the rent was paid through a date that undercut the eviction's own theory, and it left blank its own required field for the date of the notice it was built upon. It charged thousands of dollars for carpet, on an invoice dated 9 days after the report that claimed to attach it, made payable to a person rather than to the contractor's licensed company, when the actual work was the installation of new luxury vinyl plank flooring across the home. That is an upgrade, not a like-for-like repair, and it is not among the deductions the deposit statute allows. And it credited neither the keys we returned nor the personal property we left behind. From our deposit, more than $2,000 in attorney fees was taken, with no judgment entered, no fee motion filed, and no fee award made against a lease whose own terms capped the fees at $1,000. Months later, the court awarded $500 in fees, and that award was collected on top of the sum already retained, rather than credited against it. After we were gone. Within weeks of our removal, the home was listed as a short-term rental online at roughly $7,800 a month, far above the rent we had paid, and far above what the tenant before us had paid before her own eviction. Later, while regulatory complaints were pending, the owner moved a related property into a Delaware company with no local business license and no short-term rental permit on record. The framework the law provides for examining a transfer made under those circumstances has been identified for the reviewing authority. No finding has been made. And this home had a history. About 3 years earlier, it had been the subject of another eviction, prosecuted by the same eviction attorney on behalf of the same family enterprise. That tenant's removal was followed by a large rent increase to us. Ours was followed by the short-term rental conversion. The pattern is set out as a matter of public record, without legal characterization. The duplicate payment, and the refund that never came. After judgment and under protest, we tendered the July rent a second time, by cashier's check, made payable jointly to the owner and to the eviction attorney. That check cleared, and yet the cleared image carries the endorsement of neither named payee. It was taken for deposit instead under a stamp reading for deposit only, Law Offices of Stephen D. Silverstein. A check written to two people jointly can ordinarily be negotiated only on the signatures of both. Whether an instrument made out to two people was properly negotiated with the endorsement of neither is a question presented. The full record of it is preserved at the bank and can be obtained by subpoena. Against that stands a second fact. Both sides had already stated, in writing and on the court record, that no repayment for July had ever been made, which sits squarely against a separate representation made to the court that a refund had been mailed. The envelope said to carry that refund shows no record of delivery. An envelope that did reach our household I kept sealed and unopened and produced in court. What was or was not inside it was never established by anyone with knowledge of it. The point that matters is not whether an envelope arrived. It is that the money was never returned. A judgment that arrived pre-written. At one stage a document reached me captioned Proposed Amended Judgment, printed on the eviction attorney's own letterhead, with the case caption already filled in and a judgment amount already recited, over a blank line waiting for a judge's signature. A document that wears the appearance of a court's order before any judge has signed it raises a question under both the Federal Fair Debt Collection Statute and state law. It is presented here as a question. No finding has been made. Where the matter stands. The record has been submitted to a number of agencies, and those reviews are pending. None has reached a conclusion. My own former counsel, the attorney who handled the case before I took it up myself, is the subject of a state bar review, on which, again, no finding has been made. I am not a lawyer. I do not call any person a criminal. I have set down the documents of my own knowledge and the questions those documents raise, and I leave the answering of them to the authorities whose task that is. We paid our rent. We paid it in full, and on time, for more than 2 years. When the dispute came, we paid the disputed month through the proper channel, and then a second time under threat, and a third time under protest after judgment. We were removed anyway, and our home was turned to a higher use within weeks. That is the account. I ask only that the record be read, and that the questions it raises be decided by those with the authority to decide them. Statement of Complainant Audio Edition Gassio v. Tran et al., Orange County Superior Court Allegation Framing Throughout Cal. Evid. Code Section 913. No adverse inference from any party's silence. Silverstein refers solely to Stephen D. Silverstein. No finding has been made. Exact file references appear in the companion print complaint gasiomirror.com noindex/nofollow.